Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. One, two, one, two, three, four.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Tis the season, Sid.
Tis the season for what, Justin?
Well, to watch the Home Alone movies repeatedly. I'm not big on rewatching movies, but Home Alone 1, Home Alone 2, these are films that I will rewatch every year.
I see, and that's why I'm always willing to watch them again with you, because I love to rewatch movies, and there are so few that you will agree to keep rewatching with me.
It's one of my favorite movies to think about. It's one of my favorite movies to watch. Both.
Which?
Which
is superior, in your opinion?
Okay.
In your opinion.
Home Alone 1 is a better movie. The themes, the acting, the script, literally all of it is better. Home Alone 2 is funnier because those poor men.
Well, I agree that Home Alone 2 is funnier to an extent.
Oh, and Tim Curry. Sorry. Tim Curry elevates the proceedings. He's a light. Rob Schneider, down point. So I'm not counting Tim Curry because he is undone by his proximity
now,
to
see,
Rob Schneider.
Now, see, though, if that's the kind of math you're going to do with Home Alone 2, here's the problem.
Yeah.
So here, has Tim Curry. That's great. But, as you said, has Rob Schneider, also cameo by
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. So
it's tricky. Many years ago, in 20 forever ago, we did a review of Home Alone, all the injuries, just for you. You can dip back into the annals and check that out if you want to. But this year, this time, Home Alone 2.
That's right. Well, it's because, one, it just seems appropriate, and two, the injury, like, they ramp it up in Home Alone 2. I mean, generally speaking, like, there are definitely, and if you go back and listen to the episode about Home Alone 1, there are definitely, like, fatal injuries.
They're already dead.
Yeah, from Home Alone 1.
Dead.
But overall, I mean, there are a lot of injuries that are, like, yes, that's painful. I mean, stepping on glass ornaments would be incredibly painful, but it's not going to kill you.
Yes.
And I would say, like, the average fatality potential of the injuries in Home Alone 2 is higher. I'd also like to note that, so, okay, just to briefly, in case you haven't seen Home Alone 2.
Yeah, that would be weird.
Home Alone 1, the kid's trapped in the house and the robbers are trying to break in and he creates a bunch of traps.
Yeah.
But in Home Alone 2, he's trying to stop the sticky bandits now, they're no longer the wet bandits, from robbing a toy store.
Yeah.
And He does so by luring them to his uncle's house under renovation.
Yes.
Where he has already set up
a man trap.
Yes.
But he lures them to the house. Yes, he lures them there to the trap he has created to kill them.
Yes.
Yes, Jigsaw.
So I think that's more
it's a baby Jigsaw. Yes.
It is more sinister, is what I'm saying. Like, not only are the injuries we're gonna discuss, like, upping the
it's also really important. No threat. They try to justify this, actually. There's an amazing scene in the movie where Kevin's like, I'm just going to dog pound it out of New York. I don't know what I'm doing here. This sucks. I'm just a little kid. And then he hears about the Sticky Bandit's plan to rob the toy store. And he sees, in order to justify the things that he's going to do, they have a wild scene where Kevin's like outside a hospital where there's a sick kid in the hospital that Kevin like makes eye contact with, and he's like, I gotta kill these guys.
Well, because what, and he also has to learn, like, it's a whole thread because he's in the toy store, he meets the toy store owner, he's nice.
He's so nice.
He's so nice. He finds out later that all
takes
of the—
takes a wild amount of time with the transaction with the boy.
Mm-hmm.
Like a 20-minute— it's the like week before Christmas, and this guy's like, let me tell you about turtle doves. They're beautiful. There's 50 people behind him like, please just let me buy a Power Ranger. I want to go, please.
So he has that interaction. He learns that the proceeds from the Christmas, like specifically Christmas Eve, I don't know.
Yes.
Specifically Christmas Eve proceeds go to the Children's Hospital. Yes. So he learns that piece of information. Then he has the moment where he sees the child in the Children's Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he's like, I can't let this happen.
I
will murder these men.
This is not going to be a popular opinion, but I will say that all signs point to the fact that the Sticky Bandits have chosen wisely. They can absorb the loss of this robbery. This is a business in the toy industry that is giving away its biggest night of profits. They're doing fine. They're doing just fine.
Well, but see, the thing is, like, what Kevin understands is that if the Sticky Bandits take that money, that's a great out for, what is it, Duncan's Toys? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Duncan's Toy Chest, to just say, we don't have any money for the Children's Hospital this year. Sorry about that. They stole it all. We don't have extra. We don't have other money.
So anyway, they create this system, this wild system where basically by the transitive properties of film logic, the Sticky Bandits are breaking into a hospital full of sick kids and stealing all their money. And mm-hmm. Kevin is
stealing their toys.
No, it's their money they get from the toys. So it is the
I know, but they don't give the sick children money. They buy something for them with the money. So they're not stealing money.
Medicine and
that's what I'm saying. This is what medicine, toys.
This is what I'm saying. To justify what Kevin is about to do, these guys, the film has to say, look, these guys are basically like hurting sick kids, basically, if you think about it, by robbing this place. So Kevin has to kill them.
And they say it later. They even make a point because, spoilers, they do get caught and arrested by the police. They do survive in order to get arrested. But they say, like, we were just trying to steal all the toy store's charity money.
We know
exactly what we're doing.
It was extra that they had already. It was extra.
Now there are some like minor injuries. Like as soon as you realize like the Sticky Bandits have escaped from prison
mm-hmm.
and are loose in New York,
yes.
Where's also where Kevin accidentally ended up.
Right.
They start like getting into hijinks right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like Marv already has covered his hand in tape. We debated a long time. Is this duct tape? Is it masking tape?
It really kind of looks like masking tape.
And like is using it to steal things quickly because mm-hmm. it's sticky.
Yes.
So things stick to it. He steals lots of mainly like winter outerwear accessories.
Yeah.
That's the main thing he can steal well are like scarves, gloves,
earmuffs. He takes a lot of kids'
mittens. Lots of hats.
Yeah.
Lots of hats. But like there's some stuff with that because like he almost accidentally steals a woman's purse because his hand gets stuck to it in a crowd, and then he gets slapped in the face. He falls while he's ice skating soon after. Mm-hmm. These are minor injuries.
Well, they'll be fine.
We're not worried about this. The first time that Kevin starts trying to murder them is when they first, like, see each other. The three of them, like, encounter and realize, like, oh, my gosh, we're all here. This mm-hmm. is wild. And they're, like, instantly, like, we're going to kill this kid. In the middle of this busy sidewalk.
Yeah.
They like walk right over to him.
Link's
like,
gonna execute you.
Yeah. Like they're gonna murder him right there.
Right here in broad daylight.
On this busy New York sidewalk, which I guess it was a different time in New York City. This was.
Only Trump can get away with that. They should know better.
So they chase him, and Kevin stops to buy what is presumably some fake jewelry being sold at a table on the sidewalk, buy some giant strings of pearls. It's just classic, right?
Yeah.
Breaks the pearls off the string. They go all over the sidewalk.
Yeah.
The thieves are chasing him and they slip.
The old crime alley special.
Yeah. And they fall on their backs, which is like, again, definitely survivable. I don't think there's anything to suggest. Like they're getting older. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how good since they've been in prison, like their diet's been in terms of like calcium intake and vitamin D. So like, I don't think these are bone-breaking falls.
Okay.
Certainly in someone who was, you know, osteoporotic, I'd be more worried. But I think so far it's just like, I mean, if they hit their heads, that would have been bad. But they don't appear to.
Yeah.
They're always very good at falling with their necks just flexed enough forward that the back of their heads never... They have well-trained
stunt professionals doing those, not Mr. Pesci and Mr. Stern.
It is interesting that nobody else falls on the pearls, though. Yeah. It's very targeted.
Because it's wild and no one would ever fall on them, and they had to try really hard to fall on them.
I don't think you slip on pearls if you walk on them, but I've never tried.
Well, it's also weird because it's like gravel, so I think it's fine. Like, yeah. On a ballroom, I could see where this would start to be an issue, but I don't think on the gravel it's going to be a problem.
Or was it? I thought it was
the physics of whether or not these things would happen in the movie.
Okay, Kevin gets them both punched right after that. One point I want to make about the movie in general. Mm-hmm. And Justin, you actually pointed this out initially. Early on, when Harry and Marv realize like, they're going to have to face off against Kevin again, Marv is like... Well, who cares? It's just a kid. What's he going to do? It's no big deal. Which is wild.
Yeah, that is wild that he says that.
Yes, because
he was killed previously in Home Alone 1 repeatedly by a child, a small boy.
Right, yes. And so, and generally they just walk right into all the traps in Home Alone 2.
Yes.
They show very little hesitancy. There's like one moment that we'll get to where they try to actively avoid traps from the first movie, but the rest of the time, they seem to have no memory whatsoever of the previous, you know, the capabilities of this murderous child. And I think that suggests that there was permanent damage, perhaps, from some of the injuries they sustained, especially all the head injuries they sustained in the first movie.
Yes.
Maybe some memory loss as a result.
There is no way anybody would say kids aren't dangerous. This man has been hurt by a child so badly. There's just no justification for it.
And from the first jump, so they're breaking into the toy store. Kevin gets the cops there by throwing a brick through the window. And they chase him through the broken window. And when they come out of the toy store, already we got like a seesaw set up. So that like... Marv jumps on one side, and then Harry jumps, Anyway, Harry gets shot up in the air.
Yeah.
That's what happens, because it's a seesaw. It's like a cartoon sort of thing. He flies up in the air. He lands on top of a car. The car is absolutely—
Demolished
by Harry's body.
Yeah.
Joe Pesci falling from the sky. I would say at this point in the film, there's a high likelihood that Harry is dead. If you think about the force that it would take to crush a car.
Right. But he has transferred the force to the car, you know?
Well, but yeah, but there is also a force being applied on his human body.
Yes,
as he strikes the car.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's is it enough force to shatter every bone? No.
The crumple might be good. Because I think the crumple is maybe patting him a little bit.
Like pound for pound, like your bones are actually stronger than like stainless steel. So like your bones are really strong. But then there's also like density to consider. And the bones vary and it depends on how you impact, right? But one way or another, like you're getting some broken bones, you're getting some serious contusions from this. You have to start worrying about like, you know, the condition of internal organs. Like what did your spleen hit with enough impact to lacerate it?
Could
you know,
going
are you going to have some internal bleeding as a result of this? You don't walk away from something like this.
Period.
You don't just walk away.
Period. The end.
The next part, so they make it to the three-story house where Kevin's uncle's in Paris, so he's not there. It's under renovation. It is the wildest renovation, by the way.
Yeah, it is an absolute nightmare in terms of job site safety. They are all over the place.
They've just started in every room all at once.
Yeah, there's no system.
No, like they've torn out.
The demo you pointed out, the demo is happening pretty haphazardly, just people tearing big holes in walls and walking away from the job.
Yeah, and like that room just has a hole in the floor, that wall, and one exposed beam. And then this room has like the stairs are gone. Like you can't access the basement anymore.
Are there any contractor podcasts? I'd love to hear their take on the job site.
It feels like the general way it's being gone. Like if I walked into it, I would be like, are we sure this is it? Are we sure? I don't know. Not my area of expertise, but I feel like this is not how it works.
Yeah, we should start over.
So anyway, Kevin's up on the roof and he's throwing bricks. God, I feel like this is like the classic scene from Home Alone 2. I feel like it's the one you always think of. In Home Alone 1, for me, it's the paint cans.
Is it?
And in 2, it's the bricks.
The bricks are what as a kid, I had the first instance of me passing out from laughing because I was laughing so hard There's just nothing funnier than the fact that Daniel Stern gets hit with a brick and Joe Pesci keeps egging the child on and he keeps hooking bricks at Daniel Stern, who is turning in a stunner of a performance as a man who's been repeatedly hit by bricks.
There is something about the fact that the brick hits him on the forehead and he gets hit on the head by multiple bricks. And he is knocked to the ground, certainly. And he's like, he does like sort of the cartoony, like, you can imagine there are stars around his head kind of expression.
Yes, it's right? All very Looney Tunes-ish.
Exactly. But like, there's something very disturbing to me about the fact that the only injury is like the little hat, like L-shaped outline of the corner of the brick on his head, and that's it.
Yeah.
Somehow that looks worse. Somehow it's I look at that. You're
worried all the bleeding is happening inside of him. It's like...
That's worse than if it was just a big hole or something. I don't know. There's something about it that's like so sinister. Okay, physics was my weakest point of the big three sciences they make you take lots of to go to med school. I'm not saying they're the most important. I'm just saying that to go to med school, you got to take a lot of biology, a lot of chemistry, a lot of physics. Physics was my weakest. So I had to do a lot of researching to get the right calculations to try to figure out the force of this brick hitting this guy's head.
The effect of brick vis-a-vis skulls.
Yeah, like pounds of force, yeah. And what would that do to a human skull? So if we estimate that it was about 30 feet, you told me that it was about 30 feet.
I was just going by the number of stories in the house. Generally, I 10 feet per story is my calculation.
I have no spatial reasoning.
Back of the napkin math.
Yeah, I have no spatial reasoning, so this is not, I don't know. You could have said 100, you could have said 5. 5, I would have known was wrong. Yeah. I would have known 5 was
wrong.
That's good, I'm taller
people
than
couldn't
that.
Get in there.
Yeah. I'm taller than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you've noticed that you don't crouch all the time forever. So you're thinking it's bigger than like
it's bigger,
5'6".
It's bigger than 5 feet.
And you have jumped. So that's got to get us to 5'8", 5'9".
I don't know how high I go when I jump.
And your dad exists.
Oh, my dad.
So he's like, that's 6 feet at
he's
least.
He's 6'4".
6'4". Okay. Yeah. So 6'4" is the one you could say for sure.
There are taller people in the basketball industry.
Babe, I gotta tell you, spatial reasoning is not hard. It's just doing this 1,000 times until it's just like, just instinct. Could my dad fit in this room? Yes, that's spatial reasoning. That's
I can't. When I look at distance, when I look at height, when I try to estimate size of any kind, I don't know.
You just gotta be able to visualize your dad. That's what everybody's doing, pretty
visualize
much.
Visualize your dad.
Yeah,
visualize your dad. I wanna meet that dad.
Yeah, just visualize your dad.
Okay, so the brick I looked up, bricks are like between 4 and 5 pounds. I don't know, depending on the kind of brick and size of brick.
Good brick, bad bricks.
Now, and we're assuming that it's like falling at the speed of gravity, right? Like he dropped it. Now, okay, I started with this.
Because if he put more mustard on it,
it's different, then it's falling faster. So it's like about 54 pounds of force. 240 newtons, if you like that kind of thing. But I say 54 pounds because I know that in order to crush a human skull, and by the way, a lot, I can't emphasize a lot enough of people have Googled or asked on various ask and answer forums, how many pounds of force does it take to crush a human skull? This is a common question, and I am concerned. Although I also was trying to figure that out.
Yeah, you're adding to the pile, and you had pure intentions.
I know. I'm part of it, too. But there are a lot of us out there going, how much weight would it take to... Could I do it with my hands? That's a common one.
So
could a human crush a skull with their bare hands? That is a commonly Googled question.
Just so you're not alone. Sydney's there with you, too, friends, in this curiosity of yours, this dark curiosity.
And the answers vary wildly. Like, I saw some actual medical journals citing, like, 520 pounds of force is what it takes to break a human skull. And then I saw other people who were like scientifically calculating like with strength and density and all this stuff of the bone and say, no, it's like 1100 pounds of force. And then it depends on the angle and then the part of the skull. Like we're talking about like your frontal bone right there and
sure,
his forehead,
right.
Like right there in the front of the skull is what we're talking about in this instance. And that's like a really thick, heavy duty bone.
Right.
You know, different parts of the skull, it might be different. Anyway, the point is these individual bricks are probably not exerting enough pounds of force to crush his skull. Now, depending on the angle and how it hits, could they like get a tiny crack or a chip in the bone and cause damage, concussions, knock him out, all that stuff? Absolutely, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely, there's going to be damage. Absolutely, he's just not standing up and walking away after an injury like that.
Right.
And certainly bleeding and all of that would be a concern. Absolutely,
yeah.
Like an epidural hematoma. You know, blood crushing the brain and then he could die. All of that. But it actually probably wouldn't just smash his skull. I will note, though, that if you watch the movie carefully, Kevin doesn't just drop all those bricks.
He's hucking.
He's throwing the bricks.
Well, he's got to aim them. He's not a, you know.
Well, I'm just saying, genius. So that throws
calculate
off all
the
math.
Parabola of the brick, yeah.
That throws off all the maths. Maths.
I mean,
not the math. The math is the same, but the maths are different.
Well, it's bad. We can all agree. Science has to be unified in that it's bad.
So we have determined that before they've even entered the House of Horrors, they are dead, probably, or at least like mortally wounded, need to be in a hospital immediately. Mm-hmm. Will not be able to survive whatever's coming next. But they're going to get in the house, and I'm going to tell you what happens inside the house after we go to the building.
Let's go. The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth. Well, it's Mother's Day almost, and you know how stressful it is to wait the last minute, Sid.
Oh, absolutely.
What if I told you you could just knock it out right now with Aura Frames?
Well, that would be such a relief.
And Father's Day, and all the other days that you got to get gifts for a special person in your life, could you do any better than an Aura Frame?
Or just because. Why wait for a special day?
That's
just
right.
Just get somebody an Aura Frame because they'd love it.
I describe it as a high-tech gift you don't need to be high-tech to use. What that means is you can set it up for this person, this grandparent, this close family friend, whoever it may be. And after you give it to them, you can use your Aura Frames app to send pictures wirelessly. I can do it in 10 seconds right now to our mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is Sydney's mom, Mary's frame. Cute picture of the kids, whatever. Mm-hmm. We're out and about, something fun happens, send a picture.
Maybe a cute picture of me. I'm her kid.
That's right. Yeah, she loves cute pictures of Sydney, which is all of them, by the way. This was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and by me, Justin, and her, Sydney. We love this thing. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code Sawbones at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, Sid, I want to do a quick tree check with you. How are our fast-growing trees doing back there in the backyard?
Oh, Justin, they are thriving in our backyard.
They are thriving. That's right, because fast-growing trees helped us to pick the right kind of trees for our environment and gave me on the phone free consultation when I had a question about the best way to plant them. I literally called them on the phone and I talked to a person and they told me what to do. And you cannot beat that. Not in 2024, certainly.
No. Where do you get service like that?
You buy a tree from Fast Growing Trees or a bush. They got over 10,000 different kinds of plants. 2 million happy customers. You choose what you like. They're going to get it directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, but that free plant consultation, that lasts forever. This is a great company. We have really enjoyed the plants that we've gotten. I just got a bush. I think it's called a lemonade blueberry bush, something like that.
We've got two different kind of apple trees.
Oh, I can't wait for those to start producing those delicious apples that our children seem to consume at a pace that rivals a cider factory.
Like right Cooper now, will eat the core. Not a joke.
Hey, she eats the core. Right now, I need every tree you all have. I need an orchard. I need fast-growing orchards. They have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants. Listeners get an additional 15% off when you use the code Sawbones at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Sawbones at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code Sawbones. Offer is valid for a limited time. Tell them we sent you.
Last week, The Greatest Generation, the comedy podcast about old Star Trek TV shows like Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, just had its 500th episode.
And Greatest Trek, the podcast about the new Star Trek shows like Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, and Discovery, just had its 250th episode.
So whether you have a task that's roughly 750 hours long, or you want to learn about some of the production techniques that go into making one of the greatest franchises in television history, you should give us a try either way.
The Greatest Generation and Greatest Trek, the best reviewed, most listened to Star Trek podcasts in the world. They're on Maximum Fun.
Cameron Esposito here, comedian and host of Queery. Every week I get to interview someone amazing from the LGBTQIA+ community. Some queeros. I chat with them about their lives, loves, careers, and more. I've talked to, you know, giant celebs, Trixie Mattel, Lena Waithe, Tegan, and Sarah Quinn, but also astronauts, reverends, nurses. It's funny, it gets deep, and hopefully it makes you feel like you're part of something. Join me every Monday on Maximum Fun to listen to Query with Cameron Esposito.
Okay, so somehow they are going to make it in the house, despite the fact that, like, really, Harry at this point has broken multiple bones and suffering internal injuries. And, I mean, I don't know how he's walking. Marv is, I mean, has some severe brain damage, more than likely.
Right.
And perhaps some bleeding as well. He is going to try to open the door by pulling on the doorknob, which is attached to a string, which eventually attaches to a staple gun. And he gets stapled in the butt.
Yes.
Through the door. Now, you noted that that probably wouldn't happen.
I just think those staple guns, I mean, if it had been a nail gun, maybe. The staple guns lose force so fast. Like, they don't have the force to, like, embed in something across the room or something. And he's got a pretty thick coat on. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it. I think it would have. It might have stung for a second, but I don't think it would have.
See, and if it's hitting him in the... Now, the way that they make it look like it's right in the middle of his butt.
Yeah.
So, like, have we possibly penetrated, like, the rectum? Like, is the anus involved?
Yeah, I mean, we
which is
talk
a bigger
about,
deal, of
we
course.
We gotta talk about what's depicted on screen. Because, again, I don't know,
physics-wise.
If it's
just going into the cheek, I mean, that's gonna hurt, but
just
you're gonna be okay.
Just a kiss on the cheek, that's no problem at all.
Now, and then he turns around, and, of course, it is then... It's
clear that Marv's anus is ruined. Is that what you're about to say verbatim?
No.
It's clear that Kevin has destroyed Marv's anus.
He gets a staple in the crotch area. I don't know. In the jumble. He gets a staple to the jumble, as our kids used to say. They know the right words now. They use the right words.
All the time.
Yes. I taught them all the right words. I'm sorry. It's the right thing to do, by the way.
Yeah.
This is a little PSA. It's actually good to teach your kids accurate anatomical terminology.
Yeah.
That's healthy.
I just get used to hearing it a lot.
I know. It's different than maybe what you were raised with. But
what,
he gets
me? Yeah.
No,
I was raised with. Here's what I was raised with. Worm and nothing. That's what I had. Those were my, that's what's my worm and that which shall not be named. That's what I grew up with. Okay?
I don't know if that's better or worse than mine, which was front butt and back butt.
Both bad. Differently bad, both bad.
Anyway, so he also gets a staple to the scrotum, testicle, penis. Something in that area gets a staple. Again, I mean, I guess if you're talking about, like, puncturing the scrotum or, like, actually a staple into the testicle.
I'm not talk about that.
But if there's not enough force there, because his pants are probably going to stop that, right?
Yes, I don't think they need it, no.
He does take one in the nose there.
Bad, so bad. Definitely
yeah.
Could happen just like it shows because he's very close.
But I don't know if it would, I mean, like, it goes in so deep that you think, like, did it actually penetrate into the sinus cavity?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that would be, my worry would be infection with a
it's
lot
just
of these.
The
like, not so much the immediate injury as, like, you're introducing something that is not sterile, something that is dirty. I mean, that staple is not clean. Who knows what bacteria is on it? And you have just penetrated, like, the sinus cavity. That's a big deal. So infection would be a big worry. Once they get inside, Harry falls off of a... Oh, no, this is before he gets inside. He falls off... Gosh, there's so many ladder-related injuries. Before he gets inside, he jumps to try to reach the ladder that Kevin has put the slippery stuff on,
mm-hmm.
and he grabs a hold of it and then immediately falls down.
Yeah.
It's too high, again, of a fall to not sustain some kind of damage from that. I mean, like, they fall and land on their back on very hard surfaces a lot. And you can fall and land on your back and be okay. I'm not saying that, like, you can't walk away from that, especially, like, if your butt hits first and absorbs a lot of that, the energy of that fall.
Obviously, you can walk away. They did. See, it's possible.
No, well, this is not the point of reference. Mm-hmm. But, like, certainly you can. But if you're it depends on how you're landing, because if you're landing right on your vertebra, you can easily sustain some fractures.
But see, this is what I'm saying. We have to go by what the film shows us. And as far as we know, there were no vertebrae shattered.
Well, you don't see, sometimes you don't see, like, when he hits the ground, you hear the thump, and then you see him laying on the ground.
You do hear some cracks, some foley
oh,
of cracks.
Oh, there's
I
lots
think.
Of cracks. Yeah, there's lots of, yeah. Marv opens the front door and falls 10 feet through a hole face first. again, like he appears to land, like smash his face into the ground, which is unlikely. Like when you're falling, your instinct is to put your hands out in front of you. So you're much more likely to break your wrists or sustain some sort of fractures in your arms. That would be my bigger worry, because it would be very unlikely that you would fall with your arms flat to your side and just like smash your face on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, like you have a protective instinct that'll stop that. But you definitely get some bruisings and abrasions. And maybe, and at this point, somebody's got to have broken something, especially a wrist fracture. The tool bag that unzips and falls on Harry's head as he finally makes it into the house, I am assuming that the collective weight of all those tools would be a problem. Again, not enough maybe to like fracture, not to crush his skull, but to cause some damage, some definitely a concussion. Definitely, I mean, like knocking him out would not be a shock. And the last one appears to fall after he has hit the ground. Mm-hmm. So then you got to worry, did it fall on his face?
Mm.
And a facial fracture could definitely happen from any of these things. Like that's, it's a little easier to break the bones in the face than it is, especially some of the smaller bones, than it is to break a skull bone. So, you know, I'd be really worried about that. Marv falls in the basement next. And this is, so, okay. Kevin has covered the basement floor with slippery stuff. What is this stuff? I thought it was supposed to be sticky, but it's just slippery.
No,
it's like slime?
It's a green slime ooze that they, because they show it in the toy store. It's something he buys at the toy store, is that green, or maybe he takes it after he keeps it from getting
robbed. That's right, that's right.
But it's like green, a green slime type product. Greens.
So these were like the early days of slime.
Yeah, absolutely.
These were.
I don't know if
was this pre-GAC?
I don't think it was a real product. Monster Sap is what it is. It is branded as. It is made by the production team. It is not a real, thing.
But it is now.
Monsters.
Did they know that in the future all children love slime and children make slime?
I'm sure you can buy a big jar of Monster Sap.
This is the one, by the way, coating surfaces with slime so that they're slippery. That is one thing that I do feel like Charlie and Cooper would be capable and maybe would even think like on their own to do. Were they in a situation where they needed to set traps for people? I can see them making slime. I mean, they know how to make slime on their own. And I can see them coating surfaces in slime in self-defense.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, can't you see that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I can see them doing that.
Yeah, to try to, they do some haphazard like attempts like on the fly and it never works out.
No, Charlie would want to come up with some of those fanciful things.
Yeah,
Cooper would just go straight for scissors.
She would just have scissors. Yeah, I was thinking scissors.
It would be scissors. Well, you know, she wouldn't think to get a knife. She's five. But, like, she is allowed to use scissors under certain circumstances.
Who, Cooper?
Yes.
Not currently.
Under certain circumstances with our supervision so that she doesn't cut her hair again.
But they are home alone. Cooper has absolutely got the scissors.
Yes.
Even before the robbing occurred, she already has gotten the scissors the moment we stepped out of the house, I assume.
She also knows about your secret axe. And where it's hidden.
Well,
don't
tell.
I didn't tell her. She
don't
told
tell
me.
The internet.
Well, I didn't tell
They'll
the internet.
They'll try to disarm me. What if they go there
did
first?
Did you see what I just, I almost said it, and then I didn't say it because I'm trying to keep your secret. But she knows where it's hidden.
I've probably said the location of my secret axe before on a podcast, but.
Yeah. We should, well, I'm saying this right now.
Oh my God,
we're going to move it. We're going to move it because it just occurred to me our five-year-old knows where it is.
Do you think I've probably said the location of my secret axe before on this podcast was a direct quote from the Joe Rogan show?
Yeah. We finally found the one thing you can cross-reference our two shows with. There it is. Well, that and vaccine content of a different nature.
A variety. Cornucopia.
Of truths and mistruths and untruths and whatevers. Anyway, so Marv slips on the ooze. He slides across the floor. And an entire shelf of paint cans fall on him. Okay, so you estimated the paint cans probably weigh a full paint can, about 10 pounds.
Yeah.
We looked it up between 7 and 12, so that was a good guess.
Thank you.
It was a good guess. And I say that they're full because we see later that he's covered in paint and there's paint all over the floor. So they must have, at least some of them had to have been full of paint.
Yes.
There was a lot of paint in these cans.
So I gotta say, for a renovation job, they did not buy these size cans. There is no way that they bought these tiny, super expensive 1-gallon cans these guys are absolutely the worst contractors. They were in the
also they were also like there were some cans of white paint, which certainly like white paint, but the other colors were like all primary, like bright yellow, bright blue, bright green.
It's important to know this place barely has walls.
Yes.
And it doesn't have floors. And they're like, listen, this job site's a mess. We got to get all the paint in here stat. We got a good 4 months before there's even walls in this place.
We're going to put it in the basement, which has no access currently. We cannot get into the basement at this time.
How did they get it down?
They just chucked it down there.
I've worked up a complicated lever and pulley system.
So
it's really important. It's really cheap right now.
The shelf with all the cans of paint fall on him and cover him in paint. He is absolutely drenched in paint, and the paint cans hit him. And what I would really worry about is, like, you know, you have a rib cage that can sustain a good amount of force. That's why it's there, right? Like, it creates a cage around your heart and lungs because those are important, and your body protects them. But there is a limit to how much, like, ribs can certainly break. We know that. And my worry would be the crushing force that hits his chest and an abdominal cavity, his abdomen, everything within his trunk would possibly fracture some ribs, create some crush injuries there. Like when you damage tissue enough that you start to get a lot of swelling and you start to like kill nerves and close off blood vessels, you could rupture a spleen very easily, which could cause you to bleed to death.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really worried that like we're dealing with some punctured lungs some damaged viscera,
yeah,
like organs from all of the weight of these paint cans hitting him in that midsection. I mean, and they do hit his face too. So like there again, like, We've got his cheekbones are probably fractured, maybe some clavicle fractures. His nose is already broken. It's going to get broken so many times. But something else where he's not going to stand up and walk away. He does stand up and walk away where he walks over to the sink, which has been rigged to, what is the device? Because I thought it was, I mean, it looked like jumper cables hooked up to a battery.
Welder. It's an arc welder.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's not even like he's using the arc welder. I think, from what I was able to discern, it looks like he is back feeding the charge from the arc welder into, he has like rerouted the electricity from the arc welder into the sink, like the washing machine.
And it looks
sink.
Like two jumper cables, yes. Which one is clamped on each
yes.
knob.
Yes.
And so when he reaches and turns both knobs at the same time, mm-hmm. which is key, right?
Yes.
Because he's completed the circuit.
Yes.
And he is shocked. He is yes. not electrocuted.
Right. Oh, explain the difference, if you don't mind.
If he was electrocuted, he would be dead.
Mm.
He was shocked because he does survive. He is momentarily a skeleton.
That is probably the most challenging part of the movie. I think that is where we say goodbye to literalism,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of the movie trucks in. It's a heightened literalism, but it is basically literal what you're seeing, right?
Yeah.
And it's weird because in this movie, there's just one part.
Where he turns into a skeleton.
The whole movie where the man becomes a skeleton.
And then he turns back into Marv, except it's like the when you get shocked on TV, your hair goes straight up and maybe you get like scorch marks all over your body.
My theory is that part was really annoying to shoot and that's why they left it in. They're like, we don't want that work to be for nothing because it's wildly out of context.
I mean, it doesn't kill him. It, certainly he was at high risk for that voltage passing through his heart. Which, I mean, basically at that point, what you're saying is you're going to throw off the electrical conductivity in your heart and mm-hmm. your heart can stop and you die.
Yeah.
That's what you're concerned about happening when you get shocked or electrocuted if you actually die of it. And that, I mean, definitely that could have happened. It's possible that you survived that.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Maybe.
But especially with both hands at the same time.
Yeah.
It's highly likely that his heart would stop.
Which hand should he have used?
His right hand.
Oh, okay.
If you're going to – now, I mean, neither is the best answer. Don't get shocked, please, if you can avoid it. But if you're going to get shocked, it's better if you get shocked with your right hand because the conductivity is actually slightly less likely to hit your heart than it is from your left – just positioning from your left hand. It definitely either way, you could stop your heart and die.
Yeah, but
– there you go. I don't know. Either way, be careful around electricity. Where's that lightning bug?
You gotta play it safe around electricity.
There you go.
You gotta play it safe.
Okay, Harry gets his head set on fire soon after this.
Hey, just to be real clear, don't touch anything electrical. That is our official stance as a podcast. We know we just said there's a safer and a less safe way, but the more I think about it, I'm just gonna just concretely say, yeah, don't touch electricity.
No, don't.
I don't want to leave any wiggle.
I don't
want
to. Don't touch anything. Return to the days of kerosene lamps. No, don't mess with electricity. I don't know anything about electricity, so you know what? I don't mess with it. If the light switch isn't working, I don't try to figure it out. I call someone who knows how.
Me.
You can do some things. You can do some things. That's true. I am not ever going to advocate for people who are not professionals.
I've never had the whole of my being just summarily dismissed, as in, you can do some things.
No, I mean, I'm not going to encourage people who are like amateur electricians to go for it.
I don't know any in this room except for you. And then there's just me here.
You're not a professional electrician. You have no certification. Sydney, you've never taken any classes or tests.
I put in a dimmer switch. I'm still here to tell you that. I put in a few Hue bulbs.
Please don't take any electrical advice from Justin. This podcast dispenses no medical advice and no electrical advice.
I was just thinking about swapping out some of these can lights here down here. I'm funny you mentioned that.
You got to play it safe around electricity.
I have a different special electricity that most people don't even have in their house called 220. That's how into it I am. I have the special bad electricity that I probably shouldn't have.
I read that Joe Pesci actually did like burn his scalp a little bit in this scene where his head gets set on fire this time. Because his head gets set on fire in both Cumberland movies.
Classic gag.
Yeah. And then, but like his head's on fire and the only place to put it out is the toilet. And Kevin has filled the toilet with kerosene.
That's my favorite lyric in Ironic. Head's on fire, but the only thing around is a toilet.
So he sticks his head in it, and there's an explosion. I mean, he would have some really serious burns. I don't think I need to make that. I mean, like, yeah, his head's on fire. Like, the top of his head's on fire. His hat has burned. His scalp at that point has burned. I mean, he has some serious deep head wounds, and then his head exploded after that.
Yeah.
Which just kind of makes him look like a chimney sweep from Mary Poppins.
Yes.
Like, that's, again, very cartoonish.
Look. We can all agree.
But he would definitely, aside from, like, the injuries to the skin and the flesh wounds that he would sustain, like a concussive injury from the explosion, mm-hmm. he'd be knocked out.
Yeah.
Like, for sure, from all of this. And then, meanwhile, Marv is down in the basement. He accidentally pulls a 100-pound bag of something. I don't know what it is, but it definitely has 100 pounds written on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a 100-pound bag falls on him while he is looking directly up at it. So his neck is fully extended back.
Unbelievable.
I think that would hit with so much force that it would, I mean, definitely break his neck. I was wondering if it could decapitate you with that force. Probably not. It would probably just knock you backwards. Like, completely backward, break your neck, knock you backwards, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a, you know, comedy podcast. So, like, I wanted to theorize, could it decapitate you? Probably not.
100 pounds is so many pounds, by the way.
Like, I know.
It's a lot of pounds.
Harry falls. He's on a ladder and he falls forward. He might break some fingers, but probably not a big deal. They reenact the paint can, except now Harry and Marv have learned. You know, they're on the stairs. He's going to swing paint cans down in our face. We're going to avoid him. But then after they miss the first two and they think they're free and clear, he swings like a giant iron
pipe. Yeah.
Which smashes them in the face. I mean, I'm talking like face fully smashed is what should have happened.
They take it.
They take it and they fly back and fall through a whole 10 feet to the basement below.
Yeah.
I mean, their faces are shattered. The pipe then falls on them. And completely crushes their chest. So, like, they are crushed and smashed and yes, at this point. But they do not appear to sustain any injuries whatsoever. Right after that, Kevin lets a giant tool chest, like, on wheels, like a... How many feet tall is it? 4? 5? 6? 6 feet tall tool chest rolls down an entire flight of stairs, smashes through a door, and smashes Marvin... against a wall.
Yes, and breaks their noses.
It does break their noses. The door would redistribute the force a little bit across their entire bodies, which would help from, like, as many targeted, but, like, they definitely would, again, some crush injury from that. Because you got to think about injury to the tissue, too. It's not just broken bones. Like, you can't just smash a hand or a foot or an arm or a leg or whatever and not sustain damage to the tissues, the blood vessels, the nerves inside. Mm-hmm. Like, other injuries are happening. Compartment syndrome could develop.
Oh.
Where you get so much swelling and inflammation inside that space that it begins crushing all of the structures inside. And you can lose blood flow to an extremity. You can lose the extremity. Yeah,
guys at the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think about that too. So the final injury within the house is when Kevin has scaled down the side on a rope. They try to follow him. He sets the rope on fire. and they fall like almost the full 30 feet.
Yeah.
Down to the pavement below. Actually, yes. Maybe even further because they fall through like.
I think it's about 30. Because they were on the if we have to assume if we're using the number 30 as the height of the brick fall, then the height of the other fall can't be higher.
It almost looks like they fall under the sidewalk though, like they fall down to the basement, like to the
maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. Either way, the point is they land on their backs and they definitely would have multiple broken bones from this. None. They don't have any. Also, all of the cans of varnish then fall on them, and they are just absolutely covered in varnish. They're inhaling fumes from the varnish.
That's so bad.
I mean, they could
get... It looks like they get some in their mouth, which, like...
They've ingested the varnish.
This scene actually made me catch my breath as somebody who's, like, spent a lot of time avoiding huffing varnish or getting anywhere. Like, to see these people just, like, coated in it, it's really rough.
They've had a toxic exposure at this point. 100%. So, aside from the fact that they should have broken their backs...
What they need is milk. They need to get some milk.
Well, they need to call poison control and get to the hospital. Mm-hmm. They also may have developed like fluid in their lungs, pulmonary edema from inhaling that amount of varnish.
Yeah.
Let alone like it gets in their mouth, it's absorbed through their mucous membranes. And I don't know how long you can be covered in varnish, how much of that you absorb slowly through your skin before you start to become poisoned by all the substances in the varnish. They're still able to chase him to the park. Where he enlists the help of the pigeon lady, who covers them in birdseed and then calls upon her pigeons to eat them to death?
No. Well, I mean, I think they just sort of like, they just sort of like hassle them. You know what I mean?
They peck all over them. And I guess at that point, we did a whole, was it just one episode on birds? Or we did like a three-part series.
Yeah, birds are no joke. We don't mess around with birds in this house.
So aside from like, we all saw the movie Birds, and I think birds can peck you to death, like enough of them, like pulling at your flesh and your eyes and your lips and all your, I mean, like, yikes. But aside from that, avian flu, psittacosis, cryptococcus, histoplasmosis, salmonella, chlamydiosis, avian tuberculosis, the list goes on and on of the bird-related, the avian illnesses that the sticky bandits are taking with them to prison as they are carted off.
What did you... call Brenda Fricker, her character?
The pigeon lady?
Well, yes. That is 100% what her character is named.
I thought that's what she was named.
Tim Curry as concierge. Brenda Fricker as pigeon lady. Dana Ivey as desk clerk. Rob Schneider as bellman. There's almost no named officer. The guy, the cop that she talks to in Times Square, cop in Times Square. That's how unimportant these other human beings are. It's like, don't even look at them. They're just big bags of flour. Come look at this kid kill these men.
You know what, though? That's kind of seen from the perspective of a child. Like, we have a child alone who is like our vehicle for the plot of the story. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing the world through this child's eyes. And through a child's eyes, people are sort of like put into like that's how we understand the world.
Through a child's eyes, people are really just dummies. Of like
policeman, robber, pigeon lady.
Two murder victims that I will claim because they tried to rob a toy store. So I'll kill them forever to death.
I'm just saying that's a very concrete stream of logic that a child would have.
This is not a child. And it makes
internal sense in the film again.
This is not a child. He's a catastrophe.
He lures them to the house and were the usual medical laws to apply, they would die, but they don't. They survive to be jailed, and I assume, did they return in the other films? I know that Macaulay Culkin does not.
Okay, so the films that are in continuity are 1, 2, 4, and 6. 4 is Kevin McAllister, and Marv is in it with his wife, but they're all different actors. French Stewart plays Marv in 4. 6 is more like a brief cameo from Buzz that ties the universes together.
Okay. But we never see the sticky bandits just break out of jail.
They actually have
go at it again.
The best thing in the sixth one, which is on Disney Plus in like 2021, is they have Buzz in there as a cop. And they establish in there that every Christmas Eve, to rag on Buzz, people make false reports to the police about kids being left home alone because this story is so well known. So when this kid is actually left home alone, they write it off as a prank because people do this to Buzz every Christmas Eve. That's funny.
That is funny.
It's
that
good.
It is good storytelling. It is weird that that story was that widely well known that like twice this family abandoned this one child at different times.
Yeah.
And there, I guess there was no concern.
If I'm the family the second time around, I'm begging everybody to keep it crispy. I'm going to be nice to that. Concierge. Like, listen, it's just between you and me, right? We all made some mistakes here. You let a kid check into a hotel and then try to chase him. And then you thought you came into the hotel room while I was showering naked, but it was really just my kid pretending to be my brother showering naked.
Well, and also, like, they lost their kid in the airport, and the reason they didn't know where their kid was is because they sat in first class and left their kids to wander around back in coach. And so I think that there's – I'm just going to be completely honest. There's a little bit of Karen energy coming out.
A little bit.
With their confrontation with Tim Curry there. Like, come on. Come on, guys. This is on you. You lost your child.
Do you know in the fourth movie that the parents have split up and he's defending the house of his dad and his soon-to-be new wife?
No.
True.
No, that's so what?
That's true.
Why? Okay.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you've had a happy holiday season or happy having one if that's your thing. If you want to watch Candle Nights, that is our virtual video fundraising spectacular. You can still watch the VOD until January 1st. It's $5. If you pledge more, all that money is going to Harmony House. All of it, I mean, more or all of the money we raise is going to Harmony House, which is a shelter for people experiencing homelessness in our area that Sydney's very involved with, and it's a great cause. I think you'll agree.
It's a wonderful organization. We're the hub for anybody experiencing homelessness or in need of that sort of assistance, housing assistance. We provide, obviously, like a shelter, a warming space, clothing. I provide medical care. We provide food. We provide hygiene items, a place to take a shower, and then the services to hopefully get people housed and back on their feet, and your donations really help us do that.
bit.ly/candlenights2023 is the address. Also, 10% of all merch sales this month go to Harmony House as well. So if you go to McElroyMerch.com, get some of our new stuff or some of our old stuff, all the stuff, then you're going to help raise money for Harmony House as well. Thanks to taxpayers for use of their song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program, and thanks to you for listening. Gonna do it for us. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
All right. Yeah.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported directly by you.